Do you have any sense yet about, I mean, we know some of the key off-season dates, the draft, free agency starting Friday, October 9th, which, of course, is the lead into Canadian Thanksgiving. Do you have a sense or a guess as to when next season may start, Brian?
No. Well, my guess would be January 15th. They want to push it back as far as they can because playing in front of fans is a killer from a revenue standpoint. You know, like in the gate only provides, I don't know, 25, maybe not even that in the NBA and NFL. But in our sport, it's half the revenue. It's 50%. And so the dollars are vital. So they want to push it back as far as they can. But people will find other things to do. Like, we got to get these games going. In my mind, even if it means we start with no fans, then go to socially distanced fans, and then maybe by the end of the season, maybe there's a vaccine in effect, or maybe we've figured out better ways to contain the virus. Maybe we have full buildings. But I can't see that happening this season.
Yeah, and the NFL, some stadiums have gone to half capacity or third capacity. I'd rather let the fans in or no fans at all and just wait it out, because I don't like the sparse arenas. I don't think it's a good look. I don't like it. I don't know what you think about it.
Well, the choice isn't how it looks, Ziggy. It's do you want to make some money or no money? There's no way they can open their doors. Mm-hmm. You'd have 20,000 positive cases out of a crowd of 80,000. I mean, that's a super spreader event. And so, no, that's not an option at this point. So the option is, do you want to make no money or do you want to make some money and have it look crappy? And I think our owners are going to say, we don't care how it looks. We got to, and the players too. Like, they're partners in this business. It's 50-50 split on HRR. Mm-hmm. And they already owe the owners a bunch of money. They would vote for partial crowds, I'm sure, rather than none.
With free agency, Berkey, not that far around the corner now, what type of player in what pay bracket would be most worried about the offseason ahead?
Well, I know what you're getting at. I mean, first off, I'm not sure the UFAs, who, you guys know this, I think they should get paid. I think a player that runs that risk and plays the final year of his contract and runs the risk of injury, like a Pietrangelo or a Torrey Krug, I think those guys should get paid. I'm not sure they're going to get paid the same dollars or term. They might get the same wages, but I can't see 7 and 8 year deals going out in this environment. I just can't. I think the way teams do business is going to fundamentally change. And I think the middle class will get squeezed out. The QO guys that, you know, play second and third line roles on your team that make $4 million, some of those guys are just not going to get qualified. They're just going to be cut loose. So it's going to be major changes. Coaches are going to be paid less. Scouting staffs are going to shrink. And it's not just the revenue lost in hockey. It's also the core businesses of these owners. You know, like you look at Tom Gilardi, who owns the Dallas Stars. He's in the hotel and restaurant business. How do you think that's going for him right now? And Terry Pegula and Kim Pegula, they're in the natural gas business, which is right in the sewer. So it's not even that these very wealthy people have core businesses that are doing well that they can, you know, rely on. So I think we're looking at a tough next 18 to 24 months.
So, I mean, we're nothing if not self-serving here, Berkey. Does this not place the Maple Leafs, owned by MLSC, in an advantageous position if they were, hypothetically, of course, willing to give a player like, hypothetically, of course, Alex Pietrangelo fair term and fair dollar?
Yeah, the Leafs have always had a financial advantage, and they've used it wisely in many cases. Yes, they would be in a position to do things that some other teams are not in a position to do, and you're going to see backloading of contracts now. Like, it just happened with Brodin's deal, where he actually makes more in the last 2 years. It used to tail off at the end in case they bought you out. Now they want the money after we rectify the business side of this business and escrow is reduced and so on.
So would ownership be going to management now and GMs and saying, hey, before you sign anybody, I need to approve anything. You're your ability to go and sign whoever you want and spend whatever you want, I need to approve all signing bonuses. Would something like that happen now in this climate?
It's always really been like that, Ziggy. Even when I was here, I had no restrictions when I ran the Leafs, but I had to go to Richard Petty before I did anything. Management or ownership can't find out from a radio report. They better get a call first.
Trying to think of what a reaction would be of an owner if he or she
it'd be pack your stuff and get out.
Yeah, no question.
But like what ownership is going to go to you when you're running a team and saying, oh no, I don't like that deal? I'd be like a financial advisor saying, oh yeah, I think you should go in this stock, and me saying, oh no, I think that's a bad idea. I don't like the valuation of that company. Like, what do I know?
They would approve the money, and that you wouldn't go and ask for permission to do the deal. You would have that authority, presumably. And I had that authority here. But you'd have to go. I'll give you an example. So at the end of my first year in Anaheim, we had a chance to get Keith Tkachuk from St. Louis. And Bobby Ryan had to put in that deal. And we loved Bobby Ryan. We really did. And he had some good years for us. But we were trying to win. I think we might have won more than one cup if we could have pulled this deal off. So we went to the owner, and he said, you want to make that deal, you can make that deal. The problem is it adds $1.5 million to the salary cap. Was $38 million, I think, the first year. And he said, that adds $1.5 million that's not in the budget. So I'm not going to say no on a hockey basis. If you can find a way to make the money work, fine. But I'm not doing that deal because you don't have the budget approved for it. And we didn't do the deal. So that's a scenario where ownership would say no to a deal. If they said no to a deal, we don't like that deal, then it's time to say, well, it's time to start looking for a new GM.
Do you think there's any possibility Pietrangelo returns to St. Louis, or is what's out there signs, Berkey, that the relationship has been fundamentally broken?
Well, I think there's a little of both. Obviously, the negotiations haven't gone smoothly, but my information is he loves it there, and they've still got 2 weeks to make this deal. He doesn't become a free agent until October 9th, so there's still plenty of time. And sometimes rhetoric emerges about, oh, we're done here, and then the next day they're talking again. So I don't put much stock in what I read about those things. My sense is there's a good chance he still ends up back there.
Do you think we're going to see any overpaying of free agents this year? Or is that just a bad move for teams? Like, I feel like in the past we've seen, you know, the odd team will overpay for a big name free agent, but then you'd see a lot of overpayments for that middle class. Is that just all going to stop and teams are really going to be careful?
I don't know. I think the number one, I think it's a great question. I'm not used to those on this show, by the way, but I think it's a great question. My view is the number one casualty here is going to be term. I sense like with Brodin's contract, Minnesota paid market value and gave him term. So I think the market value is going to be protected. We'll work off a flat cap, and then whatever the rollback is, it's the rollback. So this year it's 30%. So you guys remember back in March, I said there would be a rollback, and everyone said, no, no, it's going to be a flat cap. It's a 30% pay cut this year. And it's going to be more in the future, just so everyone knows. The players' salaries march in unison with the revenues of the businesses, and the business is going to be in trouble. So I think teams are going to say, okay, we're paying market value for Torrey Krug, but we're doing a four-year deal instead of a 6 or 7 year deal. That's where you'll see the biggest market adjustment. And unproductive second, third line guys that are making $3-4 million are not going to get qualified. I think people will be stunned at some of the hockey players who are not going to get qualified. Minnesota already told Mikko Koivu they're not. They moved Eric Staal, and they told Galchenyuk they're not qualifying. Those are pretty big names, pretty important players.
Well, and I mean, not that it matters the exact moment and date that a guy gets signed, Berkey, but October the 9th will be a big day. I would imagine that Sportsnet will do a day's worth of coverage for free agency. Do you anticipate the 9th being busy, or do you think that guys will hold off a little bit in the hope that somebody steps up with more term or slightly more dollar? Or do you think everybody's got a general understanding of this market and how it's going to play out?
No, I don't. I've talked to a couple GMs about it the last couple of days. There's a lot of uncertainty, but I think my prediction would be this. The goalies will move right away. Like, there's a musical chairs game for goaltenders, and they're going to move right away because as soon as someone offers them a chair, they've got to sit down. So I think that all gets resolved in the first 2 hours. And then I still think it's, you know, we still got to sell tickets. You still got to generate interest. And these are free players. You know, that's, people don't focus on a free agent. Everyone thinks the term free means because he's free to go where he wants. In our language, our linguistics, he's free because he doesn't cost us a draft pick or an asset we have to trade for him. He's free. It's like finding a wallet with no ID in it. And so teams are always going to try and improve their clubs free. It's like all these college free agents and European free agents like Mikheyev, free. Free. So they're not free. They cost you money, but they don't cost you an asset. That's why they're so attractive. So I don't see why any GM would let his take his foot off the gas on October 9th. I just think the market might be different in terms of wages and term.
With the Toronto Maple Leafs, do you believe it's going to be as simple as signing a big, you know, right-handed defenseman and getting rid of salary to open up that space? Or do you think there's going to be more of a player trade, multiple players, as they try to shuffle up what they have right now?
Well, my prediction would be that they're going to have to move an asset to get the quality defenseman. If they can do it in free agency, I don't see how it works for them cap-wise. I think money has to move for them to acquire that big-name free agent, whether it's Dumba or who's not a free agent but has been discussed as a possible trade partner, or they sign Pietrangelo. I don't see how they make Pietrangelo work cap-wise, but I haven't studied that. I haven't asked Kyle. I mean, he's a hell of a hockey player, but I just keep hearing he wants to stay there, and so I can't see him moving. I mean, they're much closer to a Stanley Cup than Toronto is. The taxes are lower. I just can't see him moving with triplets.
Brian Burke is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I was reading some of the on-the-record quotes from Bill Armstrong, the new general manager in Arizona, and Burke said, look, I told my bosses, or new bosses, 15 minutes into the interview that as lovely as it is here, I'm not going to be seeing a lot of Arizona because it's going to be home to office, office to home for me. I'm going to work to change the culture and build something here. I'm not so much interested in your reaction to statements like that. I'm more interested into how you would approach working for an organization that has had money issues at times, that has been through a variety of owners, that has issues with attendance, COVID or no COVID, obviously. How do you turn the Arizona Coyotes into a success?
Well, they need a new building to be long-term successful. The building they're in is nice. Like, I think people have a perception that the building they're in isn't nice. It is nice, but it's not close to anything. It's a really hard commute, especially on weeknights. So if you go, like, when we used to play there, we stayed at the Ritz in Scottsdale. The bus left at 4 o'clock to go to the rink. So the players can't really take a nap. And I made a stay at a crappier hotel by the rink. I said, I'd rather get the 2 points than have the players enjoy the hotel. And Ziggy, you might have been with us when they did that. I'm not sure. But anyway, they need a new building long term. This owner is very wealthy, has no experience in pro sports, but has been successful at everything else he's done. He had the resources, and I say had, to build this up. But again, his core industry is gambling, a big part of it. How's that doing? Those casinos are really open and raking it in, right? So again, changed circumstances due to the pandemic. So Bill Armstrong has a huge job in front of him. But you always do when you're a rookie GM. They don't bring in new GMs for good teams unless you're in Tampa. I mean, you know, and Steve Yzerman abruptly quits, and now they got a new GM who's got a contender. That's not how it usually works. Usually the team stumbles along, they fire the GM, and you come in. And as Harry Sinden told me in 1992, when I was a rookie GM, he said, you always inherit a leaky ship. And he's got a lot of work to do, but he's a good man. He's smart. He works hard. He knows how to command loyalty. It's going to take a while because they don't have picks. They don't have a very good team. I don't think they'll overpay Taylor Hall to keep him. So he's got a big job. But your first job's always hard. You're treading water in your first job anyway.
What are your first initial thoughts on the Stanley Cup Finals?
Well, I think the hockey's been sensational. Both games, very different games. Tampa, someone gave Tampa the wrong starting time for game one. And then in game two, they gave Dallas the wrong starting time. And then it was a seesaw after that. Both teams took turns dominating the game. It was like the ice was tilted, then it would tilt back the other way. It was weird. But they're really evenly matched. You know, the question now that we're all dying to see is if Stamkos comes back tonight.
Do you think he'll make a big difference?
I don't think he'll make a big difference, Ziggy, because I think he'll just play the power play at maybe five more minutes, like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they will tell him, stay out of the way. When you're doing those even strength shifts, do not get hit hard. Stay out of the way. So probably not, but I think he's such an important player that it'll give him a huge lift, their whole team.
It almost feels like it's going to come down between Hudobin and Vasilevsky. Who do you think is a better goaltender?
Well, I think Vasilevsky's a better goaltender, but I think Hudobin has been the best goalie in the playoffs. I think there's a difference between who's the best goaltender and who's the best goaltender right now in the last 30 mm-hmm. days. The best goalie on the face of the planet for the last 30 days is a guy named Hudobin.
Mm-hmm.
Berkey? He's hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, and I mean, he's kind of been a backup most of his career. He's into his 30s now.
Yeah, reminds me of Tim Thomas.
Yeah. Well, he spent the most of his career as in the AHL or as a backup.
Yeah, just like Tim Thomas was in Europe until he was like 27 or 28. And they look the same in uniform. They play the same style. It's really weird. I had Tim Thomas in the World Championships one year. And watching Dobie, all I can think of is it's Timmy.